dribbling for Weinberg. He shoots. Let's go home, baby.
Are you hearing this Hart Trophy buzz?
I don't think anyone's going to really touch McDavid this year. He's just like, you know, head and shoulders the best player in the league.
Now with a keep in. Here's Fox going to the net. He scores! Oh, baby, what a goal! That's brilliance.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into another episode of Our Line Starts, fueled by Dunkin'. With me today are Dominic Moore and Patrick Sharp. Hey, guys. What's going on?
What's up, KT? Dom?
What's going on, Sharpie, KT? How's everybody today?
We're good. Post-Easter. Happy late Easter. How was your Easter weekend, you guys? You've got little ones hiding those Easter eggs. How was it?
Sharpie, do you guys have a little Easter egg hunt at the Sharp household? We had our little 14-month-old running around the patio finding eggs, and she kind of knew what was going on, I think.
Yeah, I have the two daughters at home, 7 and 9, so they enjoyed chasing each other around with their baskets, picking up the chocolate and the eggs. They got some presents. We've got family nearby, so they had a nice, like, afternoon lunch, dinner spread while I was doing the exciting Detroit-Tampa Bay matchup on Sunday afternoon, and then I was able to get home for a nice dinner and an evening with the family, so it was a good day overall.
Nice. That's right. KT and I spent with Jonesy the Easter evening at the studio as well, so that was a lot of fun.
Lucky you.
I think we all got a bit of Jonesy on Easter Sunday. You know, the man, the hardest working man in hockey. But guys, let's talk about those games from Sunday, because one of the teams that, you know, we were watching and Dom and I late at night called the highlights for was the Florida Panthers winning that game. So they get into the first place spot for now in that division in the Central. And you look at the way this Florida Panthers team is playing right now without Aaron Ekblad, the devastating injury to one of their star players, out for the remainder of the year, yet they're still finding ways to win games and put this thing together. I mean, Sharpie, I'll start with you, because this is a team coached by Joel Quenneville, and I don't think it's any surprise that maybe his influence has steered this team in the proper direction here at this point in the season. What are your thoughts on Coach Q?
Well, I'd agree with you, and it's no surprise to me that's happening in his second year behind the bench. I think the first year he went in there, he was trying to get his bearings back behind the bench, a whole new organization. Every player is a new face for him behind the bench. And he had a little more influence over the offseason, and now he's got his team that he wants going in the right direction. The Ekblad injury you mentioned was devastating to me. I think they can recover and maybe move on without him. But, God, he was playing some good hockey, playing in all situations. And a captain of your team goes down like that in such a bad injury, a freak injury, that you got to feel for the team. But you look up and down the roster, Barkov is no longer underrated. He's the top player. Huberdeau is getting better and better. They play on different lines, so there's your top two scoring lines. They're getting good production from their bottom six, and if they don't, they're hard to play against. And they're using multiple goaltenders, which I think is cool. Driger's been playing well, got the shutout recently. And the fact that Florida's the top of the division is exciting for me, because it's been a while since we could say that about the Panthers. We got a long stretch drive to go, but I like Florida's chances, and we'll see what happens at the deadline if they can replace Ekblad some way.
Yeah, it's funny, Sharpie. Like, I never played for Joel, but, you know, just knowing how much of a legendary coach he is, you know, even with that, when I looked at that roster before the season, you know, there were a lot of names that, you know, weren't that recognizable, still had these guys that have been part of their core. But I was not thinking that this would be a playoff team at all, even with, you know, the respect for Joel that I had. But it's just been remarkable. I keep waiting for them to kind of fall off a little bit, but it just hasn't happened. They've continued to truck along. And even like you said, with Ekblad going out. But the thing about Quenneville is that he's got the best players playing better, and he's got the guys that were maybe, you know, not as well known playing, you know, best they ever have. Guys like Frank Vetrano has got 13 goals, scored again on Sunday. And, you know, you've got a guy like Carter Verhaeghe playing fourth line in Tampa, grinding role, 12 minutes a night, whatever he's getting there. And now he comes over to Florida and he's playing on the top line, you know, playing a ton of minutes. And you know how it is as a player. When you get that rhythm, you have a coach that has confidence in you, you know, all of a sudden things start to flow. And he's had a phenomenal year. And then you still have these guys like Nola Chari that are kind of like jack of all trades that can play up and down the lineup. So it is a team that has really come together much more surprisingly than I thought. And I think most of it, credit goes to Joel Quenneville for sure.
So is Joel Quenneville the coach of the year, you guys? I mean, you have to look at that. And I mean, he certainly is of in the conversation, if not going to get this award this year.
Yeah, he'll be in the conversation. Who are some other nominees? I'm thinking if the Hawks find their way in.
I was just going to go there, Sharpie. Yeah, you got to look at Jeremy Colleton too. The heir apparent.
Wouldn't that be cool to see the two of them there in the final three as nominees? But Jeremy's done a nice job with the Hawks. I think we all expected them to be near the bottom at the start of the season, and they've hung tight for most of the year. So credit would go there. Who else is there, Dom? I'm trying to think of the different.
I would say LaViolette, you know, should get consideration for how he's turned Wash around, and then. The other one for me that comes to mind is Dean Evason in Minnesota. I don't think anyone expected them to be where they are. They too have gotten some surprises. You know, Kaprizov coming in and taking the league by storm. Kakanen and Net is a Calder Trophy candidate as well. And then, you know, they brought in Cam Talbot, who's helped. But I think Evason has really got that group firing on all cylinders, including two wins over Vegas last week. So that was a statement right there.
How much do you give credit? Like, I'm just looking at the standings here. Colorado is going to be sitting at top of the league by the end of the season. They have all these awesome players. They're a deep roster. Oftentimes, the coach of those top teams gets overlooked, but I think Jared Bednar has done a nice job in Colorado going back 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Remember, it wasn't too long ago. I think it was my final year in the league or my second last year in the league. Colorado was the worst team in hockey, and it wasn't even close. They put up a ridiculous number of points. And Bednar was the coach. Well, they've come a long way since then. So sometimes we just look at these teams with all these all-star players and just disregard the coach, but maybe he's in the running as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point because it's all about how you assess what's driving the team's success. And Jared Bednar definitely deserves a ton of credit for the way that team is playing. Obviously, people look at it and say, well, Joe Sakic has built, you know, a superstar lineup, and they've got guys like Makar and MacKinnon and Rantanen and, you know, so who couldn't coach that group? But I think that's well said, Sharp. He deserves a ton of credit. You know, there's lots of teams that have had star talent that have not performed to the level expected.
Right.
Have you guys ever been in this situation, Dom? I'll start with you, where, you know, you look at the Florida Panthers. You could even put the New York Islanders in the mix as well with losing Anders Lee. But the Panthers lose Aaron Ekblad, one of their emotional leaders, one of their vocal leaders, obviously a leader on the ice. Anders Lee, same thing, their captain. Have you been in a situation where you've lost one of your big leaders and big cogs of the team and the team somehow finds a way to rally around that?
Well, definitely. I think back to 2014 where, you know, obviously the heart of our team, Henrik Lundqvist in New York, goes down with a long-term injury. And, you know, everyone's thinking, okay, the season's over for this team. Like, this guy is the heart and soul of the team and the backbone of the organization, and with him out for a matter of months, I mean, there's no chance for the Rangers to have any success. We came together. Cam Talbot was our backup, and Cam all of a sudden just put the team on his back and stood on his head for those 2 months and played phenomenal hockey. I think we rallied because we knew we had to come together as a group. We couldn't just rely on Hank anymore, and I think it really helped us. And then when Hank came back, you know, we were that much of a better team because we had that experience. And so, you know, I think that there are some teams that will get better through that. But obviously it doesn't look like Anders Lee will be back anytime soon. But I think there is something about how teams rally and come together when guys go out and figure out a way how to win games anyway.
Yeah, I would like Lee to be playing for the Islanders, especially in a playoff series. He does something that he does it better than really anybody on the team, just provides that net front presence. It's tough to replace that, even though, would Barzal have 5 points the other night playing with Leo Komarov on his wing? So he's been doing pretty well. I look back
ridiculous highlight reel goals, all three of them too.
Like all of them are like ridiculous. Like he doesn't score any.
Let me try this. A deke, like four defensemen going through. I mean, everything. He did everything.
Even his assists are like that. Like he has no garbage goals. They're all highlight reel. And then even his assists are like end to end pass to Leo. Leo actually made a beautiful pass, Sharpie, to Eberle on that first goal the other night. So it's amazing though. This guy is like ridiculous.
Off the rush there through the seam. I remember, maybe Barzell's doing those types of things now because he doesn't have lead. He's got to up his game a little bit. Sometimes it can work in a positive that way as far as the injuries go. We lost Kaner down the stretch 1 year, but we knew we were going to get him back around the playoff time, first or second round. So we were able to just kind of set our sights on the short term, withstand, get into the playoffs, maybe win a few games, and then we're going to get our guy back. A couple years prior to that, 2012, Jonathan was out with a concussion for the second half of the season. And you guys know how those concussions can be sometimes. There's no timeline. He's coming back one day. He's gone for another 2 weeks. It was tough on us because he was such an emotional leader for us. He'd won the Conn Smythe the year before. I think it was 2011 now that I start telling the story. But it kind of wore on us throughout the season. And it took a lot out of us to kind of play without him to get into the playoffs. He eventually did come back, but we weren't quite the same. But I don't know. I look at Anders Lee being out, and maybe that's going to push Barzell to be that much better of a player and to kind of realize, man, I got to do this by myself, so to speak, and play that much better.
Yeah, if that's even possible for Barzell playing even better. I just remember from my own personal experience broadcasting the Boston Bruins and their 2011 championship team when Nathan Horton went down for the Bruins. And I mean, everybody in Boston was thinking this team could win a Stanley Cup. They've got all the tools. They're well coached, et cetera. And then Nathan Horton goes down with a concussion, as you mentioned, Sharpie. You just don't know with them. And everybody thought, uh-oh, this could be it. But somehow the team found a way to rally around it. You had the sprinkling of the water from Boston out there in Vancouver. And lo and behold, the Bruins end up going on to win the cup.
But here's a question, though. Sorry, just to throw into this, too, is what about Tampa? You've had Kucherov out the whole season.
True. Yeah.
And when he comes back, does that disrupt what you've got going on? Like, because that can be the case, too. You found this chemistry. The team has found their groove. They're playing at an incredibly high level, dominating the league again. I mean, it's a worth the thought, right? Does that disrupt what's going on, even a player of that caliber?
Yeah, it sounds like a perfect scenario. He's just going to come back and pick up where he left off. But there will be an adjustment period for sure for Cooch coming back, not only by himself to get his legs under him, to get his timing back, but they've also had players playing in that position all season long, and Tampa looks pretty good to me. So I think they'll be okay. When I watch Tampa play these days, it's like, their details are on point. They can play any way you want to play. If you want to have a run and gun type game, they probably won't let you get into one of those, but they can do that. And what I've really noticed with them, and probably why they won the Stanley Cup last year, is in these one goal games, Dom, they just take it to another level. They can shut games down. And if it's a tie game, they're going to find somebody in that roster that's going to score. So I got a feeling that when Cooch comes back, they'll slot him in there at position 1A on the right side. And the power play will be that much better. And we'll all just be talking about how good Tampa is yet again.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Rinse and repeat, re-rack our comments from last playoffs in the bubble. Well, since we're talking about some offensive players, guys, obviously we've been talking on air a lot about the Hart Trophy conversation and the players that are in the mix. And obviously Patrick Kane is in the mix, but he did mention to the media last week when he was asked the question if he should be considered for the Hart Trophy conversation, he said, I don't think anyone's going to really touch McDavid this year. He is just head and shoulders the best player in the league. Obviously, we know Patrick Kane. Sharpie, you said on the air, no, Kane thinks he's the best player in the league. But I do want to take a look at the current Hart Trophy odds presented by PointsBet. And you can see that Connor McDavid at minus 300, Austin Matthews after him, and then it becomes Patrick Kane. So I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts, who you think is going to take home this award in the Hart Trophy conversation.
These ones are always tough for me because I'm not really sure, like, how people – well, we know how it gets selected. Everybody votes on it in the media. And what is it, though? Is it most valuable to your team? Is it the most impressive season? I usually say, like, the team has to be tied to the player's performance in some way. So if Edmonton gets in, which it looks like they will, it's tough to take it away from McDavid because he's just been not only the best player to watch offensively, he's without him, I don't think Edmonton is that dangerous to play against. So he would be the front runner for me. I like what Austin Matthews is doing, but along the same lines with Chicago, and Patrick Kane. Who would you have at the start of the year finishing higher in the standings, Edmonton or Chicago? You know, so Chicago is such a long shot of getting in. Yeah. And if Kaner continues to do what he's doing, maybe he's in there. But I tend to agree with Kaner that if things kind of finish out the way they are, that it will be McDavid's award. But once again, in my argument with Jared Bednar and those Colorado Avalanche dudes up there, what about Nathan MacKinnon? Isn't he pretty valuable to that team? Every time I watch them play, I know they have depth, but he's the centerpiece of the team and everything kind of falls into place from there. So who knows? We'll see what happens.
Who knows?
I mean, it's a valid question. And just to play devil's advocate about Kane, I mean, obviously it's tough to take it away from McDavid, but if you think about it, most valuable to their team, you look at Edmonton, you've got a dynamic duo with Draisaitl and McDavid. You look at Toronto, you've got a dynamic duo with Marner and Matthews. Kane, we can't say that right now. I mean, Pia Suter coming over from Switzerland, he's not at the level of Marner or McDavid. So I think what Kane has done in Chicago is truly special this year and deserves to be in that conversation.
And Alex DeBrincat's screaming at the podcast right now.
Yeah, so yeah, I was just thinking that.
He's phenomenal too, obviously. That goes without saying. But, I mean, I just think that the level that these guys are at, and I think Kane brings that line up to another level. DeBrincat is phenomenal. Don't get me wrong about that for sure.
Yeah, but on his own, when you measure up DeBrincat with a guy like a Marner or a Leon Draisaitl, I mean, it's a bit different, right? Those guys can kind of stand alone as well. No question DeBrincat would be able to if given the opportunity, but at the moment, it seems like it's Patrick Kane kind of carrying DeBrincat through this. And that line, as you mentioned with Pew Suter, has been outstanding, and it's led by Patrick Kane. So
I'm going to change my vote for the Hart Trophy. I'm going to give it to Alex DeBrincat this year.
How many appearances do you have coming up in Chicago? You got to butter up the talk, right?
Cat for MVP. That's my guy.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sharpie's thinking future income coming up. Okay, so let's get to a team that's been playing really well that I know Sharpie has a love for at the moment. It's the New York Rangers, and they're in the mix for that final spot in the East. Just looking as we record today, they're even in points with the Flyers, but they're just a few off of that fourth and final playoff spot held by the Boston Bruins in the East. Dom, I'll ask the former Ranger, you know, can this team get into the playoffs?
Well, if you look at the goal differential in the standings, it would suggest that they should be. They're plus 18. Philly is the team in front of them. They're minus 23. Obviously, Boston's plus 10, and they're right there. But Boston has really been struggling. Part of that goal differential for the Rangers is the games against Philly. But Philly just seems to be in a total state of disarray. No one really knows how to, you know, dissect what's going on there. The Rangers have just been steadily picking up steam. It's kind of mirrored the season that Mika Zibanejad has had. As he started to pick up his game, the team has found their game. You know, for the first couple of months, they, I don't think, had their full roster for any game. You know, one player would come back and then another would go out, and COVID and injuries and Shesterkin was out for a while. And so I think if they can get everybody healthy, let's not forget their coaching staff was out for a while. they can get everybody healthy and on board, I think they have a real shot. For me, the biggest thing is whether Boston can right the ship. And they've really been up and down lately. You know, we'll possibly see something from them at the deadline that could help them. But I think it's between those two teams, Sharpie.
Yeah, I think Boston should trade back for Zdeno Chara. That might help them get in the playoffs. I'm just looking at the Rangers.
They lost some key defensemen, for sure.
Yeah. And it's tough to recover when you lose two guys that mean so much to your team on and off the ice like that. But Boston's got a good squad. I'm looking at the Rangers' schedule here. I see a lot of New Jersey, a couple games against Buffalo, some Islanders a bit. Philly, we know how they play against them. But they finished the season in Boston with a two-game set. And wouldn't that be nice if those points really mattered? Rangers versus Boston to finish the regular season. I like the Rangers, and whether they make the playoffs or not, I'll be keeping my eye on this team next year and the years going forward. Maybe 3 to 5 years, this looks like a team that has a real crack at winning the Stanley Cup. We know about the rebuild. We know we're all going to give them some time to get their stuff together, but now we're starting to see the potential in this team. And you said it, Dom, Zibanejad's kind of driving the ship there. You got Panarin and Strome on another scoring duo. I like this Lafreniere kid. I think he can get better, and he will get better. So when his development gets to, you know, max potential or close to it, that's when the Rangers will really be cooking. Kako's finally earned some more responsibility playing on the second line with Strome and Panarin. And our guy Adam Fox on the back end. I know he's getting a lot of positive press. I haven't heard anybody say one bad thing about him. But when you watch him play, it's his decision-making. It's his composure under pressure situations. He just seems to make the right decision every time. He's not always going to make a perfect play and have a goal or an assist or a breakaway pass. But he's making the right decisions every single time out there. And for a young defenseman, that's impressive. Secondary D pair is a little bit more physical with Trouba and Miller. They got the goaltending. And they're all kind of coming up together, feeling this rush, getting better together as an organization. I would hope that MSG could be packed for them one day. Dom, you probably know better than anybody what it's like to play in front of that crowd at home in that building. Maybe that's what puts this team over the edge. So to answer your question in a long answer, KT, yeah, I do think the Rangers are getting in this year and they're going to knock Boston out.
I mean, can you imagine how good they'd be if Kako and Lafreniere start to – find their dominant form and not, you know, take some players longer, right? No, not everybody can come into the league like McDavid and just dominate right away. You know, every player is different how they adjust. And for me though, the biggest question is on D Sharpie, you know, the depth in those pairs. I think they struggle against top lines some nights and that if you got talented forwards like Panarin and these, you know, Kreider and guys up front, Zibanejad, you need to get the puck on their hands, and Fox is definitely doing that. But I think as you go down the D pairs, I think they're not kind of getting the puck into the hands as quickly as they should. Fox is just phenomenal. I had a chance to skate with him for 4 months back in 2018 and see him when he was still in college.
Oh, here we go, KT. Here comes the Harvard buddies talking to you.
And any chance I can get to pump Foxy's tires. I mean, as you mentioned, no one says a bad word about him because he's a great kid. And awesome that he's got to play for the team he rooted for as a kid.
Yeah, I think that's so cool.
Just the way he thinks the game is at another level. And he's a completely unique player than what we've seen in that position in quite some time.
Yeah, he's been a fun player to watch. I had a chance, Dom, not to one-up you, to do an off-the-ice shoot with him just before the shutdown. We went to the Intrepid Museum in New York City. And I just found it so neat to pick his brain about what it was like, you know, growing up. His dad's a season ticket holder for the New York Rangers. So there's a lot of pressure that comes with that when you get to play for your hometown team. But also, I mean, he has just thrived in that role, and how exciting that he gets to skate on the ice at Madison Square Garden every night for the team that he grew up rooting for. Just a Long Island kid across the way there, short distance away from MSG. And I just think it's a great story. And he's just been able to carry all the weight of this team, the pressure, everything in stride. So maybe it has something to do with Harvard. I don't know.
No, it was funny. When I first met him, all he wanted to ask about was, you know, the Rangers team's 2014, our run to the finals. And because he was such a huge Ranger fan, and, you know, those were meaningful memories for him. So I think it's just awesome that he's living
his dream. I was just a little boy watching you growing up.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's something to that, Dom. I like talking to the younger players that are coming into the league, and the guys that have no interest in talking about hockey, whether it's the current teams, whether it's the playoffs of years past. Those guys, I don't know, they're a certain type of player. And then you have those guys that just love the game. You can tell they've been a huge fan growing up. They're excited to be in the league. They're eager to learn. They want to get better. I love talking to players like that coming in the league. And it's funny how those guys end up lasting longer and turning themselves into their best players.
Yeah.
That's well said, Sharpie. The love for the game is probably the most important ingredient. If I was a scout, that would be what I would look for first and foremost.
Before I move on from the Rangers, just quickly, guys, with that trade deadline coming up next Monday, I mean, is this a team that needs something? Do they stay put? I mean, you hate to disrupt a good thing, as we were talking about earlier, Dom, but, you know, on paper, what are they going to be looking for next week?
The Rangers?
Rangers.
I think it's on D. I just think that Miller has done really well for his inaugural season. He's played against some really top players on a nightly basis, getting a ton of minutes. But, you know, him and Trouba, you know, I think are solid defensive pairing, but they've looked a little bit over their head at times against the very top lines. And so I think they need help back there. Just having, especially if someone goes out in that top four group, I think they could really use someone back there that's, you know, really going to be able to distribute the puck, get it up ice, and, you know, help Fox out, because Fox is playing – you know, half the game pretty much. I don't think when they brought him in, they expected him to be on the penalty kill the way he is. You know, I think they thought he was going to be mostly offensive. And so if they could lighten his load or support him in that way, I think that would go a long way.
Well, whatever they do or decide to do, it's important. I think they know it. They don't need to hear it from me. The future is what's important. Whether they get in the playoffs and win the cup this year, that's a long shot. I think they know it. They're playing for 2, 3, 4 years down the road. So whatever they bring in, they want to make sure they keep what they have and don't let any valuable pieces that are going to help them out down the road disappear.
It's time for the cold brew check fueled by Dunkin'. And guys, I'll start with you, Dom. Who gets the last playoff spot in the West? It's a tight race out there. Is it the Blues, the Coyotes, the Sharks, or the Kings?
Well, I still think it's going to be the Blues. The thing is, they've just been completely decimated by injuries all season long. Craig Berube has talked about he's never seen anything like it before in his entire career playing or coaching. And it's true. I mean, they've just been absolutely crushed. And they still have guys, you know, Colton Parayko is their most important defenseman, and he's out for, you know, indefinitely. So I just find that I keep waiting for that. It's amazing that they're actually still in the hunt, in my opinion, the way they are. They finally got Binnington locked up, so that contract situation is behind them. I think it's a resilient group. There's still a lot of players from that Stanley Cup team. I think they're going to figure it out. I think that the California teams are really in a transition mode and just not ready to challenge for that spot. And I think the Coyotes are there, but I think the Blues have more of a winning mentality, winning culture that's been there for a few years now that'll get them through.
Yeah, tough to argue with St. Louis. Is there another team in the league that took it off the chin harder than the St. Louis Blues when we go back to March of 2020? They won the Stanley Cup the year before. They were in first place, ready to roll and defend their title, and then they just didn't look the same in the return to play last year, and the injuries this season have been a joke, really, when you look at it. But Arizona holding down the fourth spot right now. They don't seem to get any respect league-wide, and they're not going to get any from me. They're not going to make the top four. The bottom two teams right now, the Kings and the Ducks. I like the Kings' future. I think they got some real good players there. We've covered them a lot at NBC, and they've got a fast team. They're veteran guys are holding the fort, but I don't think they have enough to get in. I'm going off the board with the San Jose Sharks. And I don't know why. I just feel like these guys on the team, there's some veteran guys that are going to rely on their experience down the stretch. And they've been playing strong hockey as of late. Is Marty Jones the guy? Probably not the number one guy I'd pick to be my goaltender going in, but I believe the veteran Marty Jones is going to get it done down the stretch, and they're going to sneak into the playoffs.
Just to touch on the Yotes quickly, I think Tocchet does a phenomenal job. It's just the depth in that group is just not there, in my opinion.
That was the Cold Brew Check fueled by Dunkin'. This season, be sure to grab a cold brew for game time, because where there's hockey, there's Dunkin'. Guys, we talked about the trade deadline coming up next week, just 1 week from when we are recording this podcast right now. So I'm sure general managers are very, very busy. Dom, you talked about it last night on the air, how challenging this year is for general managers. I mean, there's no question between all the added elements off the ice they have to deal with. They've got to deal with border restrictions with Canada, making a trade with those teams. There's just so much to look at. But when you look at the teams, all of that aside, that need to make a trade the most, who are you looking at, Dom, right off the bat?
To me, it's Boston. They've had a good start to the season. They're right up at the top. And then, last month or so, they've just been up and down and mostly down, to be honest. They've struggled to score goals when you get outside the top line. Sharpie mentioned earlier that they need Chara back. You mentioned that, KT, that they lost Torrey. And, Matt Grizzlick and Charlie McAvoy are outstanding defensemen, but they're different players than Torrey. And Torrey is severely missed in that group. So I still think they really need help both at the defense position and at forward. At defense, it's someone that can kind of fill in, right behind McAvoy and Grizzlick and be that reliable two-way defenseman. A lot of people were talking about Ekholm in Nashville, but now Nashville's, contending for a playoff spot. So who knows what they'll do. But up front, they need help too as well, just to find ways to score more goals. You can't be a one-line team and get into the playoffs, let alone compete in the playoffs. And this is a team that has a closing championship window. Patrice Bergeron's not getting any younger, as we know. And so they have to be all in, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree 100%. They got to catch Pittsburgh, New York, and Washington or compete with them if they do get into the playoffs. And my Rangers are coming at their heels right now. So I would think Boston needs to add something at the deadline. It's funny that we're saying they need to add a defenseman after losing Krug and Chara, but maybe that's a direction that they go. Philly, I don't know where they stand as far as their roster. If they can't be too pleased with how the season kind of took a 180 on them. Maybe they try to solidify the back end. It's funny how everybody's looking for, this team just needs a top four defenseman. I mean, every team in the league wants a top four defenseman. I think that's why Ekholm's name was so popular a couple weeks ago. And who knows, maybe that's why the Nashville Predators started playing better and kind of woken up a little bit here in the last few weeks, because they heard all these teams around the league picking and choosing who they were going to get at the deadline. So trade deadline is not always the most fun time of year for players. I didn't really like it. I was glad when it was over and I could focus on the stretch drive, whether it was trying to get in the playoffs or trying to gear up for a big playoff run. So we'll see how it all plays out here with this crazy year that we got going on.
Yeah, along those lines, Sharpie, I know, so many players are thinking about that trade deadline in 1 week, and there's just so many factors to consider. I mean, if you both were playing this season, would you even want to be traded given the circumstances off the ice that are going on?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what team I was on and where I'd be going. At the start of this thing, I would have liked to be traded to an Arizona or a San Jose or an Anaheim. Start the season in January with some sunshine. That would have been nice, but deadline time is a tricky one. If you're getting moved, chances are you're going to a team that has hopes on winning the Stanley Cup or getting into the playoffs, and that's a lot of fun to be a part of. So I'd be excited wherever they ship me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just entirely depends on the situation. A guy like, Eric Staal is probably ecstatic to be in Montreal right now, an opportunity to compete in the Stanley Cup playoffs, for who knows, this might be his last chance, right? And he went from a really, really difficult situation in Buffalo that had to be miserable going through what they went the last few months. So, but then there's other guys that maybe, you look at a guy like Ekholm or something, he's been in Nashville for a long time. He's probably got, good community ties there. His family's, maybe entrenched there and he doesn't want to move at all. So it's very personal. And then, as you mentioned, KT, all these other kind of outstanding circumstances that are unique to this pandemic environment.
Don, let me ask you for some good stories, because I know you were traded at the deadline. Was it just once were you traded at the deadline?
No, I think twice. One of the stories that comes to mind is pretty funny, actually. I was in Tampa and we had gotten to the conference finals in 2011. You mentioned the Bruins championship year. We lost in game 7, 1-0 to them that year in the semifinals. And the next year, we just struggled. We couldn't find our game. And so, as Sharpie said, it becomes a very uneasy time as a player. And especially when you're, my deal was expiring. And so I knew that I was a, you know, my contract was somewhere that could fit into many teams. And so, you know, I knew that I was likely going to have my name called. And so I was after warmups, actually, we were playing the San Jose Sharks in Tampa. And after warmups, we're getting ready to go out on the ice. And Steve Yzerman, Guy Boucher came in and told me that I had gotten traded. And I had gotten traded to San Jose. And so were literally down the hall. And so thankfully I didn't play the game, but I did literally walk down the hall in my kind of base layer stuff and go meet the new GM, Doug Wilson, and flew out with them the next day. So it just, things can happen quick.
That exact same thing happened to the Hawks. My first year there in 2006 with Jim Dowd. You remember the old veteran guy, Dowd, that played forever? He was on our team in Chicago. Took morning skate at the United Center. We were playing Colorado that night. He went home to the suburbs to have his nap and his pregame meal. Woke up, had been traded to the team we were playing that night. Drove back to United Center, went to the visiting locker room and played against us. So that was probably my crazy. Funniest memory of the deadline deal. That was the year that we were out of the playoffs by Christmas time. We had all these veteran guys, and they all got traded at the deadline, one by one. And we moved like five or six guys, and we played the game with 10 forwards. And I was getting all kinds of ice time. I thought, this is awesome. I can trade deadline the best. Now I
get to everybody. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, it's certainly going to make our podcast next week interesting, because I know a lot is going to unfold in the next 7 days, and we'll be able to recap it all next week and see. You know, we'll have probably a different conversation to talk about who are the contenders now with the additions and subtractions from lineups at that trade deadline. I find it to always be an exciting time of year, but I'm not on the ice. I don't have to worry about uprooting my family and going to a different city. You guys are stuck with me. I'm not getting traded anytime soon. So,
well, we can talk next week, KT, about DeBrincat and his charge towards the Hart Trophy.
That's right. There you go. I love it.
Hey, what if we didn't even talk about goalies can win the Hart too. So, hey, what about Vasilevskiy? I think there's probably a few goalies that could make an argument.
What about Kevin Lankin and Catherine in Chicago?
Yeah, you got it. I mean,
oh, here he goes again. Chicago.
Duncan Keith should win the Norris, I think. That'd be my vote for Norris, Dunks. Selke, I'll give to Carl Soderberg from the Hawks.
My favorite award.
He's giving it to me about the Harvard connection. This is just the Blackhawks hour here.
Yeah, we'll have to get some UVM conversation in here next time.
Oh, now you're talking.
Yeah, awesome. Well, it's been fun catching up with you guys. Another week of Our Line Starts, and we'll look forward to seeing everybody next week for Our Line Starts, fueled by Duncan. Thanks for joining us.